cancer on this nation. No. We're not talking about political cancer here, although politics does have a nasty way of contributing to this epidemic by way of ignoring the economic drain upon the afflicted, to include the cost of care, and of course the medical community really doesn't. What about the treatment, the drugs? In addition, they have chosen by corporate bribe to ignore the truth as relates to the dreaded disease known throughout the world as cancer. I've been involved with the program for some 20-odd years due to a freak accident which brought me together with one of the modern pioneers in the education of cancer, Dr. William Donald Kelly. When I first met Kelly, it was via a request to be a guest on my then daily broadcast, Perspectives on America. I'll not tell you the entire story at this point, not today, because it's not germane to what we're going to talk about. And yet the one key element that Kelly taught me so many years ago was that no one can cure you of any disease. If you have a broken bone, your doctor can set the bone in a cast with or without pins if necessary. But if your body's not healthy, a bone will never properly set nor become totally healthy once more. Choose your ailment, heart disease, cancer, arthritis, or many other maladies. It matters not, for it is your responsibility to properly treat your own disease through nutrition, exercise, and proper supplementation in many instances. It is for that specific reason that at the turn of the millennium, I developed a website for Dr. Kelly in order to expand his reach to the world. In the early years, we devoted our postings and commentary strictly toward the disease of cancer. And yet, the more I worked with Kelly, the more I realized how intertwined many of these diseases are. And so began the major expansion of the Kelly site. And yet, having said all of the above, today we shall return to our roots. And that is cancer. Good evening. Jeff Bennett here for a Wednesday night installment of To Health With You. Yes, it's my twisted sense of humor. Glad to have you here for part two of where we began last week. Kelly once said to me that no matter what a cancer victim chooses to do, whether they choose to follow his program in order to become and remain cancer-free, or follow the teachings of Gerson or Brzezinski or Clark or the Wizard of Oz, do not commingle the various programs, as there are idiosyncrasies which in fact can cause damage and exacerbate your path toward optimum health. In other words, do not play doctor. Choose a program that you feel will be right for you, the victim, and stick to it. Last week, we began a new, what I believe will wind up as a three-part series, will end next week. Mary Beth Gonzalez, Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez's widow, several weeks ago came across an amazing commentary on one of Dr. Gonzalez's computers. Now, as you may be aware or remember, Dr. Gonzalez passed away 7 years ago this month. And for her to have never come across this and then to find it has been amazing. We entitled it Dr. Kelly's Story, How It All Began. Tonight is our second offering of this transcript. Kelly's local library. If you recall, we ended last week with Dr. Kelly's mother kind of chewing him out, and he decided to go to a library and do some studying. Well, his local library fortunately had a copy of Max Gerson's 1959 book entitled 50 Cases. Now, Gerson was an interesting character in medical history, very prominent German physician who, during the 40s and 50s, developed his own personal approach to degenerative diseases involving primarily a diet of raw foods, nuts, seeds, grains, lots of fresh vegetables and juices. 8 to 10 glasses a day of the juices. And now with this approach, Gerson had great success with a whole range of degenerative diseases, including cancer. During the 1930s, with the advent of Nazism, Gerson, being Jewish, of course, left Germany, came to New York, set up his own clinic, and for about a 20-year period, continuing to have a fair amount of success using this particular diet of his. Well, Gerson hypothesized that meat was somehow toxic to the human body, toxic to the liver. Raw fruits and vegetables helped the body clean out, stimulated the liver, made the immune system work better. He wasn't too sure of the science, but he did know that the results were good. And he published all of this in 1959. Well, Kelly, my God, was a little ecstatic about this because it provided confirmation that the diet he was on really did have the possibility to work. The diet that his mother put him on. So Kelly became progressively stronger over a 3 to 6 month period, but he kind of stabilized. He was lucky. I'd say he was lucky in a very unlucky way. He was unlucky, of course, because he had pancreatic cancer, if you recall. But he was lucky in that he had such bad cancer that the tumors protruded from his liver, and he could feel them. And so he could really monitor his own progress. And he knew that when he got lazy on the diet, which he occasionally did, that those tumors would grow within days. And he knew that if he stuck to the diet religiously, those tumors would regress. And so he had his own tumor marking sitting right there on his belly because he could feel those tumors. And that was very fortunate. But about the 6th or 7th month, those tumors didn't shrink anymore. And just about the time the tumors stopped shrinking, he developed severe digestive problems. Now, the problem with pancreatic cancer is that it destroys the pancreas. Well, you know that the pancreas does. It produces insulin. It produces digestive enzymes. And without those digestive enzymes, you cannot digest food. And one of the most common serious problems with patients with any kind of pancreatic cancer, whether it be cancer or pancreatitis, is to severe digestive problems. Bloating, gas, nausea, vomiting, the dumping syndrome, constipation. They just cannot digest and utilize their nutrients properly. So Kelly figured out there had to be some simple solution to all of this. So he went to his local pharmacy. Talked to the druggist, who was a good friend of his, who said, well, that's no big deal, just as some pancreatic enzymes. Just use some pancreatic enzymes. So he pulls out a bottle of Vibrant pancreatic enzymes. Now, we're going back to 1964 here. And the pharmacist said, take these. They'll provide the enzymes that your own pancreas is not producing. A very simple solution. It'll take care of the gas and the bloating. Well, Kelly, if nothing else, was a man of excess. And if he was going to buy one bottle of the pancreatic enzymes, he was going to buy 100. So he bought about 10 cases. And that day began to take them. And he began taking 3 with meals, then 4 with meals, then 5. And after about 3 days, he was taking about 50 capsules of pancreatic enzymes with each meal. And he noticed that something began to happen in his gut. Every time he took a dose of enzymes, there was a twinge of pain in the areas of the tumor in his liver. And after a couple of weeks on those enzymes, he began to notice that the tumor seemed to actually be softening. In fact, he began to believe that after this period of the stabilization on the diet, they were actually shrinking and dissolving. But he said, this doesn't make any sense. I take these enzymes within a half an hour of taking them, I feel some pain, some gnawing, something going on in these areas of tumor. But those enzymes are destroyed in the gut. Kelly said, I cannot conceive how this is possible. I don't see what these pancreatic enzymes would have to do with those tumors in my liver. And so once again, Kelly went back to his library. And again, Kelly, being a scientist, He was never satisfied without finding an answer. He looked up pancreatic enzymes by doing a literature search. And he was fortunate to find the name in the literature, Dr. John Beard. Probably one of the most eminent men of the 20th century, one of the least known men of the 20th century. Well, John Beard was an eminent embryologist working out at the University of Edinburgh in the 1980s and 90s, and around the turn of the century. Well, Beard, like Kelly, started out with no interest in cancer whatsoever. No, he was an embryologist who was interested in comparative embryology, particularly in the placenta. And his area of expertise was the placenta. Now, we know what the placenta is. After fertilization in the mammal, the embryo produces an organ called the placenta, which literally eats into the mother's uterus. Now, if it serves as an anchor to the growing fetus, it also serves as the connection between the blood supply of the mother, which means nutrients to the baby, and the waste products to the baby. There's a kind of a point of connection between the blood supplies of the baby and the mother, and that's how the baby is fed, and that's how the baby gets rid of its waste materials. Well, my friends, Beard was a smart man, and he noticed that about the mammalian species that he studied, and he studied dozens, that the placenta would grow into the uterus and would grow and grow and grow, and at a particular time in every species, it would suddenly stop growing. In mice, it was 10 days. In humans, it was 56 days. In every human embryo, virtually to the day, 56 days, and that placenta would cease growing. Of course, in elephants, it was something like 300 days. But Beard was particularly interested in this because he realized something unusual about the placenta. And he was the first person to make this observation, but not the last. He saw the placenta as kind of a tumor because, indeed, in fact, it does behave like a tumor. The placenta is a piece of tissue that, as we discussed, invades the mother's uterus, much as a tumor would invade the mother's uterus. Now, usually, the placenta reaches a certain point of growth and stops. Sometimes it doesn't. And in women where the placenta does not stop growing, they develop a very serious cancer called cholangiocarcinoma. Used to be one of the most aggressive cancers around. But fortunately, there is a chemotherapeutic agent. It's called methotrexate. It really does knock it out. And now 80 to 90% of these women can be cured. Prior to the advent of methotrexate, it was a very, very deadly disease. And so, now we find that there was a tradition of the placenta behaving like a tumor. John Beard became aware of this. And he made the connection in his own mind that he said, if I could figure out why the placenta stops growing at a certain point, 56 days in a mother, maybe I could figure out a way to stop tumors from growing. Now, it was a great leap of faith, and it led to 10 years of research. And what they did is, in a variety of animal studies, they investigated the growth and development of every organ system there was, the tissue of the organs, trying to find some connection between the development in the embryo and the cessation of growth in the placenta. It took Beard 10 years before he hit upon the fact that the only connection that existed, the only thing that changed, for example, day 56 in humans and 10 in the mice and day 300 in the elephants, was the day the placenta stopped growing. The embryonic pancreas began to work. There was absolutely no other connection. None. That's kind of an interesting concept, though, because embryos don't really need a pancreas. They get all the nutrition they need from their mother's blood supply. They don't need digestive enzymes. They get them for free right from the mother's blood supply. They don't have to chew it or digest it. In fact, their digestive system really is not functioning. It's not needed until the day they're born and they begin eating through their mouths. And so again, on day 56, which is pretty rare in embryonic development, the placenta began to work. It started producing pancreatic enzymes, and Beard said, listen, what possible function could these pancreatic enzymes have other than to stop the placenta from growing? And if indeed they do stop the placenta from growing, perhaps they could stop tumors from growing. In November of 1904, Beard presented his hypothesis that the pancreatic enzymes represent the main defense against cancer, not the immune system or any other system. And he presented this before the Edinburgh Scientific Society, and he was universally laughed at, because there was one very bright army surgeon in the audience who was a cancer specialist. And of course, in 1904, there was no cancer therapy other than surgery. And this guy had seen a lot of his patients die, and he was willing to listen to anyone, even this crazy embryologist out of Edinburgh who proposed that pancreas enzymes could cure cancer. Well, after the lecture and all the booing and the throwing of tomatoes, this army surgeon went up to see Beard and said, I'd like to try your therapy. Well, in the next move, Beard and the army surgeon developed some interjectable pancreatic enzymes. And the first case documented in the medical literature was metastatic laryngeal cancer. Now, even today, laryngeal cancer is a really nasty disease. Doesn't have a really good prognosis. The man had metastatic disease where he had a huge tumor sitting in his throat. And this army captain injected the enzymes with Beard's assistance over a period of 2 weeks. And in 2 weeks, that tumor was one day just thrown up by the patient. And they had it documented. And the tumor was dead. And that, my friends, was the first documented case of a patient apparently cured. No time. Thank you. This is the first case, documented case, of a patient apparently cured by the use of injectable pancreatic enzymes. It was published in the British Medical Journal, and it caused an enormous controversy. Oh yes, the usual controversy. Oh, the patient didn't have cancer. The results were faked. That wasn't really a tumor. This is the same kind of crap we hear today, people. A number of doctors, however, did get interested in Beard's work, and over the following years, about 30 or 50 papers were published in medical journals, both in the U.S. and in Europe, documenting the regression of tumors, and in fact, some cures with the injectable pancreatic enzymes. Well, you can sit out there and say, well, that's wonderful, but why didn't Beard's work take hold if it was so wonderful? Well, in fact, in 1911, Beard published a book called The Enzyme Theory of Cancer. And maybe only about 15 people ever bothered to read it. And the reason is that just about the time he published his book, Madame Curie announced that radiation was a safe, non-toxic cure for virtually all cancer. Madame Curie had a fabulous reputation. She had done that wonderful work with radiation. She proposed at the time that radiation was perfectly safe. It would take a generation of radiation oncologists to die from leukemia before we realized that it wasn't as safe as we thought it was. Did you hear what I just said to you people? It would take a generation of radiation oncologists to die from leukemia before the medical community woke up to realize it was not as safe as it was thought, except for one very interesting factor. If that in the world is the case, then why do they continue to use radiation? Now, Madame Curie was also mistaken to believe it would be useful against virtually all cancer. You know, there's very few cancers that are radiation sensitive for any prolonged period of time. And yet Madame Curie sold her work in the world's press that this was the answer to cancer. And Beard's work was forgotten. And then he died in about 1920 and died in obscurity, and his enzyme theory was forgotten until one William Donald Kelly in 1964, because of the use of pancreatic enzymes given to him by his local pharmacist, Kelly began to suspect that those enzymes were getting rid of that tumor in his gut. There was one problem. Beard had said that the enzymes had to be injected, that they would be destroyed in the gut. In fact, every medical and dental student who's ever gone through dental or medical school in the U.S. or any other country was taught that all ingested pancreatic enzymes are wonderful digestive aids, but they're destroyed in the gut, and they're not absorbed, active, and intact in the gut, but that doesn't happen. You see, Kelly was taking the enzymes orally, and he said to himself, well, wait a minute. One says it has to be injected. I'm taking them orally, and I know something is going on here. So Kelly once again returned to the literature. And lo and behold, in the 1930s and 40s, there were a whole series of wonderful experiments documenting that oral ingested pancreatic enzymes in both human and animal studies are absorbed, active, and intact in the gut, and do serve wider physiological functions. The easiest way to document that is with a 24-hour urine collection. You feel a patient. You feed a patient a huge amount of pancreatic enzymes and then collect urine for 24 hours. And you can see how much of those enzymes are going to be excreted in the urine. And it turns out that virtually 100% of what you take orally comes out in the urine, not in the intestinal tract, which means that they have to be absorbed. And with that problem resolved, Kelly began to think about the raw diet he had been upon. Now, remember, Kelly's therapy began with his mother's vegetarian diet. We talked about this last week, and if you missed last week's program, I strongly urge you to go back into the archives and get the program from, what the heck was the date? I don't even know. I got to pop it open and take a look here. Because if you missed that program, it would go back to the 29th of June, 2022, and go back and listen to that program so that you understand the basis of how we've reached this point with Kelly. Once again, going back to the vegetarian diet, the fruits, the vegetables, the seeds, nuts, grains, all the raw, lots of juices. And Kelly began thinking about this stuff. And he said to himself, I wonder why that diet stabilized me initially. Well, he was kind of taken by this idea of Beard's enzyme theory. He said, you know, raw food is a wonderful thing. It's got lots of vitamins and minerals and trace elements, and it's loaded with nutrients. And this, of course, is widely recognized. And then he said, when you cook food, and his mother insisted that the food had to be raw. When you cook food, you don't really destroy too many of the vitamins and minerals and trace elements. Most vitamins and minerals and trace elements are not sensitive to heat. And so then Kelly began to wonder, why does this diet have to be a raw diet? Why did Max Gerson use a raw diet? What is it about raw food that helps cancer patients? And he kept thinking and thinking and thinking and thinking. And he said, Well, the vitamins and minerals and the trace elements are not destroyed by heat. What is destroyed by heat? The only thing destroyed by heat are enzymes. Well, raw food is loaded with enzymes. It's just packed with enzymes. Every cell in every body has at least 50,000 enzymes. And so when you eat raw food, you're getting a load of enzymes. When you cook food, you get nothing. Because the enzymes are heat sensitive. They're destroyed and inactivated at about 118 degrees Fahrenheit. And so when we cook food, we don't destroy the vitamins and minerals, but you destroy every enzyme in every cell within that food. And it's an important concept when you think about it. When you think about it, we're the only species in the history of the world. You know, we're talking a billion years of life and evolution. It cooks its food. Every other species of animals eats raw food except for us. We're so damn bright that we decided that cooking food is better. And we decided that some anthropologists will tell you that 50,000 years ago, some say, oh, a couple hundred thousand years ago, we started to cook food. It tastes better when you cook it. If you give a dog some raw food or cooked food, it's going to eat the cooked food. But if you eat cooked food, you don't get any enzymes. And Kelly began to think about this. And he said, you know, I just cannot believe I'm the only person in the history of the world who ever thought about the fact that when you cook food, you do something profound like destroy all the enzymes. And that might have an effect on health. And so Kelly went back to the library once more. And lo and behold, he learned about the work of a man named Edward Howell. Howell was a doctor who graduated from the University of Illinois Medical School sometime around 1920. Brilliant doctor, great career, except for one thing. He was sick as a dog. Now, maybe if he were alive, he'd been diagnosed as having chronic fatigue syndrome. He was depressed. He was weak. He was dizzy. He couldn't get out of bed. Had no interest in his work. He was fatigued. Had fevers, chills, sweats. Now, when a doctor's sick, it's scary. I mean, we always try to go to the best doctor, try to find out the best answer for what we've got. And so this guy went everywhere, from Columbia to Presbyterian to the Mayo Clinic. They told him there was nothing wrong with you. You're just too stressed. You don't really want to be a doctor. You need to be a psychiatrist. Even in 1920, they were telling people stuff like that. But Howell didn't like that answer. He spent his whole life learning to be a doctor. And at the age of 24, with a medical degree and unable to function. And so out of desperation, nobody ever goes to the natural therapist's first choice. They go out of depressed desperation. Howell ended up in a spa run by a naturopath. And the naturopath took one look at Howell and said, you're going on a diet of raw foods. And raw foods meaning vegetables and fruits and seeds and nuts and grains. Now, Kelly saw three different people coming up with the same diet. Howell was too sick to ask questions. He wasn't thinking very clearly. He went on the diet because he was desperate. Within 3 months, he was virtually completely well. And as he got better, he felt strong enough to ask questions. And he asked this wonderful old naturopath, what is it about raw food that got me well? And the guy gave him one simple answer. Enzymes. In 1920, my friends, we didn't know too much about enzymes. We knew some. Enzymes are catalysts. They enable reactions to occur in biological systems with a minimum input of energy. you know, there's reactions that occur in the human cell that if it weren't for enzymes would require 1 to 2,000 degrees centigrade. We would disappear in a puff of smoke. Enzymes allow reactions to occur with a minimum amount of heat and energy input. They increase the efficiency of both biological and non-biological chemical reactions. When you cook food, this naturopath said, you don't destroy the vitamins and the minerals and the trace elements. You don't destroy the fat and the protein. There's as much fat in a cooked McDonald's as there is in raw beef. But you destroy the enzymes. And so he told Howell what was known, that all biological enzymes are inactivated above 118 degrees. Well, that struck Howell as a pretty profound concept. And he made the same connection as Kelly made 40 years later, that we were the only species of animal in the history of the world that cooks its food, and that all of this might have a profound effect on our health. We all know about the vitamins, the minerals, the trace elements, the proteins, the fats, the carbohydrates. We never think about the enzymes in our food. So Howell perceived, and so did his naturopath, and so did Kelly 40 years later, that the enzymes in food may be the single most important nutrient in our food. The nutrients being required for repairing or rebuilding the damaged tissue, for preventing disease. After all, it was enzymes that are the metabolic machinery. And those enzymes may be used in the body for repair, for rebuilding. Certainly, Gerson's work and Kelly's own diet that he was following, courtesy of his mother, proved that there was something in raw food that could lead to health. And it had to be the enzymes. Howell spent 50 years of his life documenting the effects of raw foods on human health. His studies are absolutely profound, even to this day. In many respects, he's like Beard, one of the most brilliant men of the 20th century, and like Beard, probably one of the least well-known because he was outside the orthodoxy. Nobody paid any attention to him. And in so many respects, so few paid attention to Kelly. Now, let's kind of convert this. Let's go back and talk about Kelly directly. Kelly had been found to have cancer, pancreatic, given months to live. So far, he's with us. I don't mean in this modern day. He's been gone now for some years, my friends, but he was with us at that time in his life. And he spent much time at the library, much time studying. And he was doing pretty well. He had his diet down. He had his enzymes down. He understood raw foods. He understood pancreatic enzymes, and he was doing pretty damn well. And he was 9 months into his therapy, and the tumor was regressing, and he was working 9 hours a day seeing his patients. And everything was going well. And then he began to get sick. And he woke up one day feeling too tired. He canceled his patients and stayed in bed. And the next day he felt worse. Tired, fatigued. He just thought he was getting a flu. And then he asked his mother. His mother said, just stay on the diet. Stay on the enzymes. But his mother, from everything I've heard, was a pretty tough character. She just told him, you just keep doing the program. And by the third day he was sicker. And the fourth day he began vomiting. Now, this became a bit scary because he would take one of his doses of 50 capsules of enzymes and would throw them up immediately. But Kelly was kind of a tough character. He'd take the 50 pills again, and he'd throw them up again, and he had this big battle with his stomach. By the end of the day, he gave up. He said, I just have intestinal flu. I'll stay off the pills. And so he stayed off the pills for 2 or 3 days. He began to feel better. He said, okay, I can go back on my pills. But he was scared. He knew if he stayed off of those enzymes, the tumors were going to grow. And so after that, 3 or 4 days later, he felt fine. And then suddenly he began to get sick again. And he felt tired and fatigued and lethargic. Fevers, chills, sweats. By the fourth day back on the enzymes, he began throwing up his guts. This is all kind of scary again, because those pancreatic enzymes were his lifeline. Without them, he was going to die. Kelly had four young kids, and if he died, they were going to go back to the orphanage. He had no choice. He stayed off the pills a couple of days, and he felt better. But as he stayed off the pills, and remember, Kelly was lucky in a very unlucky way, because he had his own tumor marker sticking out of his belly. And if he stayed off the enzymes, those tumors began to grow, and he didn't like that too much. So on the enzymes, they'd start to shrink. But then he'd get sick. Off the enzymes, the tumors would grow, but he'd feel better. On the enzymes, the tumors would not shrink, but he would feel sick. That makes no sense. On the enzymes, the tumors are going away. I should feel better, he said. When off the enzymes, the tumors grow and I should feel worse. On the enzymes, when the tumors break down, I feel sicker. And so Kelly kept thinking about this over and over. I mean, being a scientist. And Dr. Nick Gonzalez, in giving this lecture, said I'd have probably cried and gone to bed and forgotten about the whole thing. But Kelly stayed up day after day after day. Kelly was quite an interesting guy. When he had a problem. And there was a point in time, Nick Gonzalez lived in Kelly's home for a year and a half. It was a lot of unsolved problems. And Gonzalez says he could remember days when he wouldn't let Gonzalez sleep because something had to be thought of. Now, Gonzalez claims he needed 6 or 7 hours a night in sleep. Kelly got about 30 minutes. So it became a pretty difficult thing to be around him. Physiologically. Also psychologically, spiritually. Kelly was trying to figure out this problem of why he felt worse when the tumors broke down. And one night in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, he finally figured it out. He said, I know what's happening. Tumor wastes are making me sick. Tumor wastes are poisonous. And that's what it is. And a light went off. And he said a lot of the symptoms that people are getting on chemo, this goes back to 1964, they didn't have a lot of the chemotherapy agents, but they certainly had chemo and people certainly got sick on it. Kelly said, it's the darn tumor breaking down. I bet that's why people get sick from the treatment for cancer. As the tumor breaks down, they get poisoned by tumor waste. And Kelly said that nothing, absolutely nothing on earth is more toxic to a cancer patient than dead tumor wastes. And that was his statement. And it seemed to be true. And when off the pills, when the tumor would be growing, he'd feel better. But when on the pills, he'd feel sick. He got a lot of symptoms. Fevers up to 103, chills, sweats, almost like a very severe anaphylactic sickness, like response, muscle aches, pains. He said it was the tumor waste. Now that led to another investigation. And Kelly was looking for some way to help the body get rid of the tumor waste. And he went through the medical literature. He had to find some way because they had to increase the efficiency of the program. He had to. The patient, in this case himself, to stay on those enzyme pills, because those pills were in the lifeline. Now, Kelly went through a number of medical journals, went through a number of medical textbooks, and the thing that kept coming back to him was the thing that raised the eyebrows of the orthodox colleagues more than anything. And some of you folks out there are going to laugh when I mention it. A little device called the coffee enema. And almost nothing in the history of the world has generated more controversy than coffee enemas. Kelly learned about coffee enemas, ironically, not from some strange esoteric health publication, were from the Merck Manual. Merck Manual said that coffee enemas were a therapeutic tool from 1899 to 1977. And Kelly learned about them right in the Merck Manual. And his doctors learned during the 1920s and 30s, when you take coffee rectally, caffeine stimulates the liver to release its toxins and dumps its toxins much like a dump truck. So it's not surprising when you think about it. You take caffeine rectally, you can stimulate the gallbladder and the liver ducts that dump their waste. And you know, all of this has been documented by very sophisticated radiographic studies, which just about 30 people have read. So coffee enemas seemed like the logical thing to do, and Kelly wasn't too happy about it, being a very neat gentleman, but he figured he had no choice because he wasn't just fooling with some esoteric research project with some student or some study. He was dealing with himself, and his life depended on him. So very reluctantly, he went to the store. He says he got his local chock full of nuts coffee. Didn't use organic coffee the first time. He bought an enema bag from the local pharmacy, and very reluctantly and very gingerly, he made up his coffee and gave himself his first coffee enema. Now, Kelly was a smart man. Before he took his first enema, he went on his enzymes 4 or 5 days until he was feeling really sick. And he had a fever of 103 and nausea, and he was vomiting, and he had muscle aches and pains, and he really was sick. But he had to be convinced that these enemas would work. And he did an enema. And in a half an hour, his fever went from 104 to 99. His muscle aches and pains were resolved. He felt almost normal. It was almost a miraculous occurrence in Kelly's own mind. And from that day on, he did coffee enemas for the rest of his life. Never missed a day. So that became the third part of the Kelly program. First part, diet. Second part, pancreatic enzymes. And the third part, the coffee enemas. Oh, that crazy Dr. Kelly. He got better. And after about a year and a half, 2 years, his tumors were gone. He was back at work as an orthodontist. But when he hung up his shingle again, people didn't come to him for straightening of their teeth, though. You see, Kelly had developed quite a reputation as the crazy dentist who had cured himself of cancer through his mother's nutritional program. And the first day he opened up his office, he got calls from people with cancer and with asthma and multiple sclerosis from the local outlying towns there in West Texas wanting to come on by and go on that diet too. Now, within a couple of years, Kelly was no longer treating people with crooked teeth. He was basically treating primarily advanced cancer patients with nutritional programs. He developed such an international reputation that the local medical society had him thrown in jail in 1969. And he had copies of this little book that he'd been publishing. And they absconded it and they burned it. Oh, because you don't want to offend the AMA. That's, to some of you, that's the American Medical Association. To some of the rest of us, we openly refer to them as the American Murder Association. You see, there's nothing that offends the American Murder Association more than a dentist who cures cancer. Because, my friends, it's not supposed to happen. No, it's all right. I mean, I understand. I'm an MD. I'm a little offended by the idea, too. But mine, it kind of bothers me that Dr. Kelly did it. That's the words of Nick Gonzalez. So Kelly had an international reputation. Had this wonderful program, a diet of raw foods and vegetables and nuts and seeds and grains. Had the wonderful pancreatic enzyme. And he added other vitamins and minerals to make the enzymes work better. With coffee enemas. And he was doing pretty well. But he wasn't doing well enough. And Kelly always said, You don't learn from your successes. Your successes make you feel arrogant and wonderful and may please your mother. But you learn from your failures. By about 1969 or 70, Kelly was probably going, he was getting about 50% of his patients well. The bad news is he was losing about 50%. And he couldn't figure out why. I mean, he was pretty pleased because most of his patients were pretty sick, but he couldn't figure out why he was losing them. And he'd try out everything on a patient who was failing. Increase the amount of grains, decrease the amount of grains, give more juices, give less juices, change the relationship of beans to rice. But some patients, no matter what manipulation he did, they would do badly. And one of them was the woman who was going to become his second wife. I am going to end a portion of this program right here. And in our next chapter next week, I want to pick up with Susie's story. Because it all has a distinct reason. Now, we've talked about a lot of strange things here today. Things that may be absolutely fascinating to you, may be entertaining to you. It's not my purpose to entertain you. Okay? It is not my purpose to entertain you. What we're leading up to, ultimately, is what we're going to refer to as metabolic typing. Because that is where we're beginning to head toward here. You remember, these people were taking their vegetables, they were taking this, they were taking that, blah, 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 blah. Right? Next week, we're going to take this a step further. Come on, come on, come on. Here we go. And we're going to take this a step further to begin to explain what we call metabolic typing. I bring this up for two reasons. I made a decision over the weekend, or maybe after we did last week's program, I can't remember time-wise. As you know, I'm the editor and publisher of two of Dr. Kelly's works. I was asked by the Kelly family and foundation to take over that project some years ago. I'm not going to bore you with the whole story right now as to what we did, but the first book that we had to approach was called The Self-Test for the Different Metabolic Types. This is an extremely, extremely important book. And what is even more interesting is I received an email yesterday inquiring about the book from a woman who recently has taken a test. It's a metabolic typing test that she took online. But she feels there's something grossly missing out of it. She began to realize it was not the Kelly test. She's contacted me to order the Kelly test. So that was the first book that I had taken over. I had to clean up some typographical errors. I found that the font size was grossly oversized. There was a pamphlet that we produced separately that we made a decision to also include in the book. I got tired of getting the pamphlet printed and then the book printed and then putting them together in a package. Anyway, let's just go ahead and do it. Dr. Kelly's book, The Self-Test for the Different Metabolic Types. Much of what we've begun to talk about today, the raw foods, the nuts, the et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all began to change when he met his soon-to-be new wife. And Susie required meat. And we will share that story with you next week. If you are interested in getting a better handle on your health for any reason, I'm going to strongly urge that you get a hold of us. We have a page online. You can go to drkelly.net. There's a little piece at the top right that says the bookstore. Hold your mouse over it. Drop down to the second book, Dr. Kelly's Self-Test for the Different Metabolic Type. It gives you a full description, exactly what, the whys, and wherefores. And I'm going to tell you exactly what I've done. I have put for the month of July only, I have put a $12 discount on this book. So long as this program airs throughout the month of July, this price will continue. Look, it's still not bad. Its normal price is $44, $45, $46. That's all delivered. And by the way, this book can be used 5 times. I've seen this book on Amazon for $257 a copy. Well, somehow they're getting it through me, and then they're turning around ripping their people off. I strongly urge you to get a hold of this book if you want to get a better handle on your own health. Dr. Kelly's Self-Test for the Different Metabolic Types. Take the test in pencil. You can use it up to 5 times, because I'll tell you something. Sometime during the first year, maybe the second year, you're going to find your body has improved so much that all of a sudden it's going to start to go the other way. It doesn't mean you're getting ill. It doesn't mean you're kicking the bucket. It means that changes are going to need to be made. And so you take the test again and you find out where the fine-tuning must take place. $35 postpaid. You can order it through PayPal. I got to be honest with you. I'd rather you send me a check. Our address, the P.O. Box, everything is down there. Kettle Moraine LTD, P.O. Box 579, et cetera, et cetera. It's at the bottom of the page. But if you want to pay by PayPal, be my guest. It's okay. I'm less concerned about making the buck than getting you people healthy. And by God, right now with what I'm going through, I'm probably the least person who should be talking. We've all got to deal with these issues. Take advantage of it. You can find that in the bookstore on drkelly.net. Next week, we're going to pick up with the next segment of all this. My concern is getting everybody on their pathway to health, getting myself back on it. But specifically in this case, talking about this series, we're predominantly talking about relation to cancer. It's been a lot of years of doing this. I don't regret 1 minute of it. I look forward to the phone calls that I get of people who maybe have an interest in cancer, their situations. There are times I spend more time talking on the phone with people who may be cancer victims than not, than I do with the people contacting me about precious metals. Take a look at it. A little bit later tonight, I'll have all that we've done today published up on the website. Got a couple minor little adjustments to make. We'll have it up, and next week we'll return with Chapter 3. Of this amazing work of Nicholas Gonzalez, who puts so much effort to talking about Kelly on a continued basis. You spend time at our website at drkelly.net. You'll be amazed at the number of videos by Nick Gonzalez. And there's not a one of them where he does not talk about Kelly in depth. He learns so much from him. I challenge you to learn as much as well. Thanks for being with us. With glass lifted on high, I say, to health with you. Good night.
It brings back the sound of music so tender. It brings back a night of tropical splendor. It brings back a memory evergreen. I'm with you once more under the stars. And and down by the shore an orchestra's playing. And even the palms seem to be swaying when they begin the beginning. To live it again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart. Divine, what rapture serene, till clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So don't let oh yes, let them begin to begin, make them blend, till the stars that were there before return above you, till you whisper to me once more, darling, I love you, and we suddenly know heaven we're in when they begin the beginning, when they begin the beginning.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.